Greetings and good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is March 7, 2019. We are beginning to see the first signs of spring here in Nashville. Some daffodils blooming, and as usual for Nashville, we are still having some cold temperatures sprinkled in at night. It's been far too wet to garden, and I'm anxious to get the early vegetables out. At the outset today, let me remind everyone to subscribe to our channel on iTunes Podcasts. In this way, you'll be informed immediately when new editions of the podcast are published. I have learned recently that there are numerous other podcast providers where you can find this podcast. As the host and originator of the podcast, it is not really possible for me to keep up with who picks it up and where it is otherwise available. I do try to monitor the iTunes feed to make sure that it gets posted there. My presumption is that that is the most reliable place for you to find us. Also find us on Facebook by searching the Mark Fraley Podcast. And as always, if you like what you hear, share it with others. We're going to have some fun today and maybe even learn something. My guests today are Jeff Otto and Laura Kimball. This husband and wife team are the proprietors of True Bee Honey, that's T-R-U-B-E-E, honey located in Eagleville, Tennessee. That's about 50 miles south of Nashville. I first learned of them through my friend Barry Burnett, who's the proprietor of the Produce Place here in Nashville. We talked today about honeybees and other pollinators and their importance. We also talk about the threats posed to pollinators by natural and other toxic environmental conditions. Most importantly, though, we talk about honey and how they have been able to make a niche for themselves and their business by dealing directly with specialty stores and retailers and by developing some unique products, which you hear about. They really do have an inspiring story. And so I hope you'll enjoy my chat today with Jeff Otto and Laura Kimball. Jeff Otto, Laura Kimball, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Hey, oh. Mark. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for coming out. It's really terrific to have you here. It started out as a sunny day today, didn't it? And now it's all cloudy again.
Yes, we are dreaming of spring.
So today we're going to talk about True Bee Honey. Your business, which is not necessarily a new business, it's a few years old now. Before we do that, I want to hear a little bit about yourselves. Where you're from? Are you from Middle Tennessee? Where are you from? And how did you get to this idea of being beekeepers and purveyors of honey? Why don't you start, Laura?
Yeah, I'll start. Yeah. Well, I'm from South Carolina originally.
Okay.
Didn't grow up on a farm or keeping bees or anything like that. Got into journalism in my 20s and worked for a few different newspapers. One of the stories I did was about a beekeeper, a feature story, and that kind of piqued my interest then. And I told Jeff about it. He's a photojournalist. He also worked in newspapers. Told him about it, and it turned out it had been kind of a lifetime interest for him.
Okay.
So he got a surprise gift for Christmas that year. And it was a beehive.
You know, I was doing a little research before we got together today, and there's actually a video of that story.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to YouTube and search True Bee,
yes,
you will find that video there. Turning down the microphone just a little bit. Okay, we're good. Jeff.
I grew up in Western New York, north of Buffalo. There is a north of Buffalo.
North of Buffalo.
Most people think that's the end of it.
That's Ontario, I thought.
Just about. I could see the mist from the falls from my bedroom when I was growing up.
Wow.
And as a 12-year-old, had a paper route, and there was an old fella on our paper route that sold honey. And when he hung the honey sign on his front porch, that week I would trade him his week's subscription to the Niagara Gazette for a jar of honey.
And a jar or a pail?
A jar.
Just a
pint of honey.
All right.
That was his honey was $2 a pint, and the newspaper was $1.75. So he called it
fantastic.
That got my taste for honey, and I'd watch him from afar. I never got too close. And then, as Laura said, you know, we both worked in newspapers for years and both did a story on the same guy. And I came back from taking pictures and said, you know, I'd like to have a hive at some point in my life, thinking when I was 70 and had nothing better to do. And I got a hive and a book for Christmas, and the book said I should have two, and now we have about 300.
Wow, 300 boxes, I guess you'd say. Okay, that's a lot of bees.
It keeps us out of the bars at night.
So when, well, darn. We'll have to find an excuse to get you out to the bars at night. So when did you come to Middle Tennessee?
Oh, we moved here in 2007.
Okay.
We moved here for Jeff's job.
All right.
It was another photojournalism job with a publishing company in Cool Springs. And he did that full-time for a while. I worked freelance for a while writing.
Okay.
And then took a job with Gannett for a few years. And I don't remember what year we went full-time, True Bee.
You went full-time in 2010.
Okay.
And I went full-time this past September in 2018.
Okay. All right. So it's for a lot of the time, it's been a part-time gig.
Well, it's been full-time, but along with another full-time.
I got you. Well, bees are in the news these days, and pollinators are in the news these days, which is one of the reasons I was so interested in getting you all here. Really to get the viewpoint or the perspective of professionals in the field.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, I've talked to several people over the last couple of weeks getting, you know, thinking about this program, and many people are unaware of bees and what they do, and that there are different kinds of honey, and people are just generally unaware. The honeybee is not a native bee.
It is not.
Tell us about that.
The honeybee is European in origin and was brought over with the settlers. Was originally called the white man's fly by the Native Americans, because when they started seeing that, they knew shortly behind that the settlers would be, they'd be finding the settlers, because the bees have about a 3-mile radius of flying. And they're not native, but they are probably one of the largest pollinators, certainly commercially used in the United States.
Right.
They're very adaptable, and they've adapted well here. There are some problems now that we're facing that, you know, we're combating, and we've figured out a lot of what those are.
I want to talk about that in just a minute, but I guess one thing is that there are native bees.
There are hundreds of different native pollinators, not just bees, but flies and butterflies and moths. And many of the native bees, you see them and you think they're a fly. They don't look like a honeybee, or they're huge and they're a bumblebee.
Mm-hmm.
And the honeybee is unique in how it lives, its structure in a hive. There are other, like a bumblebee has a similar structure, but it's a much smaller. Where there's 60,000 bees in a honeybee hive, there's 600 in a bumblebee hive.
I got it. Okay.
The honeybee is the only pollinator that actually collects and stores nectar for future use.
So interesting. You know, my wife and I have traveled a bit in, you know, Scotland and Germany. And last year we were in Cuba. And everywhere we go, we try to buy some honey from a local person.
Oh, that's
great. So the European settlers brought them to the continent.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've sort of become dependent upon them for pollinating our crops. Is that right?
They are. They're a prolific pollinator. They're easily managed. You can put them where you need them. And we're currently, we've got many of our hives out in California pollinating almonds. And prior to that, we had them down in Florida. And we're doing some pollination on some vegetable farms down there. And the rest of them are sitting in an orange grove making some honey, which we'll probably leave for the bees. It's not going to make enough honey that it's worth extracting and bringing home. And most people here want local honey. So the majority of the honey we sell here is produced in Middle Tennessee.
All right. So you, let's go back. You started with two hives. You have how many now?
About 300.
Okay. And so how many are here in Middle Tennessee now?
Currently?
Yes.
Probably somewhere between 30 and 50.
Okay, and the rest are in Florida and California.
Yes.
And I guess because in Tennessee in the middle of the winter, there's not too much blooming. There's always a little bit of something blooming.
Right. The problem in Tennessee is you get, as we just had, you'll get a very cold, cold spell, followed by 8 or 10 days where it's 60 degrees. In that time, the bees will, at 55 degrees, the bees cluster up and they just stay warm and move around in the hive and eat honey and protect the queen. Okay. When it gets warm, they'll break cluster, and the field bees, the bees that are out flying, will go for a fly and they'll see what's out there. They'll come back. There's very little for them to collect this time of year. And so they've burned up a lot of energy. They're going to eat more honey. And now they've broken cluster. They're not real tight. They're not keeping warm. And it gets down to 14 degrees like it did last night. And so every time that happens, you lose a few bees to cold. And the cluster is to maintain the brood that's in there. And if they haven't clustered back up, you're going to lose some brood to chill brood. Okay. It's going to get cold and die. So it's this up and down shift of temperature is detrimental to bees.
And sometimes you have to actually feed them.
Correct. Especially when you get a year like this that it's been mild and the bees are flying, but there's nothing for them to forage. So if you haven't left enough honey for them, or it's one of those years that they're eating more than you planned, you have to supplement feed.
So taking them to Florida and California is good for them.
Florida is a source of natural nectar for us. Like in September, when there's nothing else or very little for them to do for the rest of the winter, we take them down there and they actually get, it's almost like spring again for them. They build, there's a lot of pollen, there's a lot of nectar.
That's fantastic.
And the hives all get stronger there than they would be here. And when we take them to California, it's beneficial for the pollination for the almond crop.
Okay,
and
so
we bring them back and they're so strong in the spring here.
Right.
Where a lot of other beekeepers are experiencing losses, you know, in the early spring.
I got it.
But ours are coming back pretty strong.
So interesting.
Ready to go.
So talk about the threats to bees.
Sure. There's, CCD or colony collapse disorder has been in the news for quite a few years, and it's actually not a defined illness. It's kind of like the perfect storm of many different illnesses that the bees get. There's a varroa mite, which is kind of like a tick or a flea that gets on the bee, and it attacks the larva. And in attacking the larva, it puts viruses in the bee's bloodstream. And those viruses, they cause a deformed wing syndrome, which the bees then can't fly, so they can't forage. And it also will cause a lethargy, that they just don't have the energy to fly and forage, and the bees just don't thrive. And these viruses then contaminate the hive, and the bees that can fly sense that, and they leave, leaving behind the queen in a small cluster of bees that either can't fly or haven't flown yet. And that's what the collapse of the hive is from. And you take that along with, there's a tracheal mite that embeds itself in the trachea and causes further illnesses and problems with flight. And
are there treatments for these pathogens?
There are. There's a large array of treatments on the market for both varroa and tracheal mites. And there's a Nosema, which is kind of like a dysentery the bees get. All these things contribute to colony collapse disorder.
Gotcha.
And maintaining your hives and making sure they have a good balanced diet, that they're not just eating, that you're not taking so much honey that you have to feed them sugar all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Honey's not only good for people, it's good for the bees. They're making it, and they're making it for food. And so we want to leave them as much honey as they need, or in our case, we take them down to Florida and they restock their shelves. It's kind of like a grocery store. They go out and pick it all and they bring it back, and then they've got a variety of pollens and nectars to eat.
Right. So besides the bugs, let's just for a class of problems, are there environmental issues involved with the problems with the bees?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Everybody likes a beautiful lawn that looks like a golf course. Unfortunately, when you do that, you've eliminated a lot of forage. And,
Okay, say more about that.
Well, in our lawn, we like to say we're keeping it for the bees, but there's a lot of clover in our front yard.
Gotcha.
And I'm not spraying for it.
Right. Many people would think that's a weed in the lawn.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's defined as a weed. If you call ChemLawn out, they'd get rid of that in a heartbeat.
Right.
We go out of our way to plant that. We've got a farm down in Eagleville. The honey house is what we call it. And we've got 8 acres there that we have a dozen different varieties of plants that we've got blooming throughout the year. We've got crimson clover that's going to start blooming shortly, and that's going to follow all the way through August. We'll have flowers that we've staggered, so there's always something for the bees to eat. And in our neighborhood, you know, our neighbors, you know, one neighbor has a hyssop plant, and they said the bees are all over it at this time of year. We've got holly bushes in front. And if you look for things that the bees can forage on and include them in your landscaping, you're helping the bees. Not everybody wants a lawn that looks like a golf course, but if you do, you can do other things for it.
And that's one of the most common questions we're asked.
Okay.
Is, well, we don't want to keep bees, but what can we do to help the bees? And the answer is plant, you know,
flowering
bee-friendly plants.
Right.
Things with lots of pollen and nectar.
Right. And avoid using insecticides.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, nobody likes a house full of ants, and nobody wants spiders around their deck. And the most important thing is, if you're going to use pesticides, there's a big pamphlet that comes with all these things, and read it and follow those instructions.
Okay.
And apply them at times when bees aren't flying. You know, if you have to go around the outside of your house where the flower beds are, do it in the evening. You know, you'll kill the insects you want to kill, but you're not going to get the honeybees that are foraging at
Got
the time.
You. Well, then there are insecticides that are taken up into a plant, and the bees that forage on the flowers of those plants will ingest some of the insecticide.
There's a new class of insecticides called neonicotinoids, and they'll coat a plant with them when they drill the plant in. It's mostly in agriculture. They'll drill the plant into the soil, and they want to stop worms and insects from eating the plant or the
So
seed.
It's a systemic.
It's a systemic right. insecticide
right.
that they've found trace elements of it in pollen and in nectar. France just outlawed every neonicotinoid in the known to harm honeybees. You know, we're not at that point here yet, and you know, there's a large lobby to make sure that this high producing plants are viable, and it's just a balance of, you know, I mean, we work closely with farmers and we understand what they have to do, and hopefully they understand what we do.
To what degree do you think the use of insecticide is a problem versus the natural occurring bugs? I mean, can you compare and contrast?
I think it's this goes back to the CCD and the perfect storm. You know, where the insecticide might have been a small hit to the bees, their immune system's already compromised by all these viruses, and now that's just like the
got
last
you.
Straw.
Or I got
the viruses were the last straw, and it's just a it's, you know, in maintaining hives, you're looking at the big picture and trying to make sure that you're giving them the fighting chance that they need. And whether it's through the diet you're supplying them, by where you're putting them, or the treatments you're doing to knock the viruses down, or making sure that you're not putting them, you know, do your homework on who's planting what near you.
So interesting. Now, you all keep bees here in Middle Tennessee on property that you own?
Yes,
okay.
The property we own,
okay.
and on a few other farms as
okay.
well.
Okay, all right.
We live in Arrington, where we have only 3 acres. We have some of our bees there, and then we have our honey house down in Eagleville. We have a lot of the bees there, but there are a few other farms where we put bees seasonally. Beatty Farms in Murfreesboro. There's a blueberry picking place in Franklin where we put our bees seasonally. So we kind of move them around a little bit, even locally.
Okay, so what they're eating really affects the nature of the honey that's produced.
It does. And if we were going to bring some honey for you to sample, but then we decided the eating noises might not play very well.
Oh, well,
on
you
the,
never
on
know.
The podcast.
It was always the first.
Next time.
I had the guy from the Tennessee Wine Producers Association.
I listened to that, yes.
And I was hoping that he was going to bring wine and we would sample them, but we didn't. So
one thing we do, we don't do a lot of farmers markets anymore, but we do some festivals around the Nashville area.
Mm-hmm.
And we take our spring harvest and we take our summer harvest, which is produced by the same bees, but tastes dramatically different. The spring harvest tastes like berries, flowering spring trees like, you know, cherry and
dogwood,
dogwood.
Yeah.
Black locust and tulip poplar, everything
black
you see blooming.
Tree.
In the next 2 months.
Yes,
sure.
Our spring harvest, and in the stores, it has a green safety seal on it. It says Tennessee Spring. It's typically lighter than our other honey. It has a floral taste. It goes well with a lot of light cheeses, green tea, yogurt, things like that.
Okay.
While our summer harvest is predominantly clover and wildflower nectar, because that's all that's blooming here, really, in the summer. And it's darker, has a more robust taste, and it's also the flavor that most people associate with honey, I think, because it's a clover honey, and it's something you find a lot.
That's so interesting. Beth and I traveled to, and you were talking about Florida, Beth and I traveled to St. George's Island in Florida. You know, every couple of years we go down there, and we always get Tupelo honey.
Oh, yeah. People love that.
And it is so extraordinarily flavorful and sweet.
And you know what's funny? A lot of people, like you said, don't understand really what honeybees do or how that works. And we have people ask us if we have sourwood honey.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, well, there's no sourwood trees here.
Yeah, so, that's a mountain thing.
Right. But I think a lot of people just don't understand how that works.
People need to be more aware of their surroundings, don't they?
Yeah.
So you all have been growing this business and just checking out your website. I mean, you're selling honey all over America.
Yeah, but not in such a big way. You know, most of our customers are... I know that you know Barry from the produce.
Sure.
Place. Most of our customers are small independent grocery stores or boutiques.
Okay.
In fact, the Produce Place was our first wholesale customer.
Well, I didn't know that.
In Nashville.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yes.
All
right. So we love them. And, you know, all these customers buy a few cases at a time. And it's we can't really, I don't think we could do the volume, you know, to be in a great big store. We're not in Whole Foods, but we have a great, just a great supply of smaller.
So how do you go about finding the people that will sell the product for you out there?
Mostly word of mouth. We've gone to market in Atlanta a couple times, but it's been at least 4 years since we've been. And mostly it's word of mouth. I think people just search local honey or raw honey, or gourmet honey.
One of the things that has brought us some customers is we are in a Nashville-based store in the airport. And so they've got all Nashville products in there, and they carry a couple different varieties of our honey and our lip balm. And a lot of people are passing through the store and they grab it thinking they just want a Nashville souvenir, and they get home and they call us and they want us to send it to them, or they happen to have a store, or they give it to somebody who has a store. And that's how some of this has spread out too.
That's really cool that the airport would be a venue for that sort of.
Yeah, they have a great store there that just supports local products.
Right. Right, I've seen that store, but I don't recall seeing the honey there, but I just walked past. Also noticed that Acme Farm Supply, Acme
yes,
Feed and
on
Seed
Broadway.
On Broadway.
Yes.
For our listeners who are out of town, First and Broad, downtown Nashville, used to actually be a feed store.
I've heard that.
Well, it was before
we moved here.
Believe me, it was a feed store. Wish it was still a feed store,
frankly.
Because it was such a cool place to go and buy your garden seeds and garden supplies. It was abandoned there for a few years, and now it's been turned into a kind of a nice music venue. And
yes.
They have a little mercantile in the front.
Yes.
And your product is there.
Yeah, they carry our barrel-aged honey in particular.
All right.
That's actually one of the products that's helped us kind of cross that boundary.
Well, that's what I want to hear about. Tell us about that product and how that came to pass.
That one's fun.
All right.
Basically, we get used whiskey barrels from a local distiller and put our honey in it for a few months, and we call it barrel-aged honey. The honey takes on the personality of the barrel, so it tastes oaky, charcoal-y. And
it's always whiskey.
Why don't Jeff can tell you about
whiskey or rum?
The first time I did it, it's predominantly whiskey. It's predominantly bourbon.
Right.
The first time I did it, I drove up to Kentucky and got a barrel from Jim Beam. Put 53 gallons of honey in it, and Laura walked out in the shop and said, "You just ruined that honey." And I said, "Well, it's either going to be great or it's going to be horrible. I don't know what we're going to do with it." And I let it sit for a few months, and it picked up a lot of the nuance I was looking for. And it's got, you know, you taste the honey, and it's kind of eliminated some of the sweetness you associate with honey, but it's picked up the oak and the charcoal and the, you know, the bourbon. It's got a little bite of bourbon to it.
And that's the product that's helped us cross that local barrier, because, you know, people want local honey, and we understand that. If you live in Mississippi, you want honey from there.
Right.
And but that one product, since it's more of a just a gourmet item, it's kind of a lot of those stores you're talking about, the boutique stores, it's that honey that got them, that they heard about and then bought our products.
50 gallons of honey is a lot of honey.
It was a good year and we had a lot of honey, and I thought, well, I'd like to try this. You know, bourbon was just kind of kicking up, and you know, I came up with this idea and thought, well, I'm going to give it a try. And it was a gamble because, you know, that's a lot of honey.
And, that is a lot of honey.
But that product, now we collaborate with Nelson's Greenbrier.
Nelson's Greenbrier, Bellmead.
Oh, sure.
And they bottle Bellmead, and we've partnered with them. I get my barrels from them, and I return barrels to them.
All right, let's go back and let's explain to our listeners. Bellmead Plantation,
yes,
is here in Nashville. It's a historic site.
Yes, a tourist destination.
Mm. A tourist destination, and it's associated with the horse industry in, yes, Nashville and in Middle Tennessee. Now, they are producing wines and some whiskeys.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't grow anything on site, so this is something that they just hire somebody to do a label for.
Nelson's Greenbrier produces their whiskey.
Okay.
We've partnered with Nelson's Greenbrier, and we get used whiskey bottles, freshly dumped whiskey barrels, rather, from them, and we'll put our honey in it. And after we're done getting what we want out of the barrel, we get it back to Nelson's Greenbrier, and they've started putting Bellmead bourbon back in it.
Oh, my.
This barrel just goes on forever.
So now they're doing what they call a honey cask finish bourbon, and it's a 10-year-aged bourbon that they put back in the barrel, and then it picks up the nuance of the honey that we put back in there to get the nuance of the barrel. And they do limited editions. They've done 3 releases at this point, each from a couple barrels, you know, small runs, 150, 300 bottles. And the last one they had was last month, and they had 300 people waiting outside at 8 in the morning for a release at noon in the snow,
Isn't
waiting for
wild?
This bourbon to be released. And people were coming from as far as, I mean, you saw Florida and Louisville. People
they were at the Bellmead Mansion waiting for this product?
Nelson's Greenbrier.
Oh, okay. Where is
it's
that?
It's at Marathon Music Works on Clinton Street.
Oh, okay. Sure enough. Sure enough. Okay.
Yeah, they've got a full distillery up there, and that's where they make the...
And it's kind of this whole series they've done. They have several varieties, not just the honey one, but it's become a collector's item to get every specialty bourbon in the series. So that's what's attracting
They do
all
a sherry
people.
Cask and a Madeira cask and the honey cask and...
Oh, man.
It's wild. I know.
That is just crazy. So, I don't mean to get into secrets of your business, but just generally, how much of this do you produce?
Everything we're selling, we produce.
I understand that, but a bit is do y'all bottle a million bottles of honey or
you know, I couldn't even tell you without going back through and seeing how many bottles we bought last year. Because, I mean, we've got... all the way down from an ounce and a half bottle that we do little mini sets.
It's for favors.
But of the bourbon infused?
Oh, gosh. We're doing about a barrel a month.
Okay, so 50 or 60 gallons of a month.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a lot of honey.
Well, and since we're not a huge, huge honey farm in the grand world of beekeeping, we decided a few years ago the way to make money doing this is to have smaller bottles and make it a more gourmet product. And we don't do squeeze bears. You know, we don't sell a bunch of bulk honey, you know, quarts and things like that.
Right.
But we've turned it into more of a specialty gourmet product to get more mileage out of the honey.
Right. Well, and speaking of the produce place, I go, this is a little store that I go to a couple times a week to buy groceries.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to the little girl that's the checkout girl. And I said, well, I'm going to interview the True Bee people this week. She said, they have the best chapstick product, lip balm, I guess you'd call it. Tell us about what's going on there.
I'm so glad you asked. It's my recipe.
Oh, really?
I'm a lip balm fanatic.
Okay.
And I always have been. I used to have a favorite brand, and I started to not like it as much, a beeswax lip balm. And then we started keeping bees. And when you harvest the honey, there's always a lot of beeswax left over. You kind of scrape the top of the beeswax off of the combs. That's a whole other story. But beeswax is a byproduct of the harvesting process. And so I started tinkering, making my own beeswax lip balm. And that's the one that she has at the produce place.
So what makes a good beeswax lip balm? I have not tried this product.
Well, I'm going to send you some.
All right.
It's my product, the beeswax lip balm we have, is 5 ingredients. And the beeswax, everyone knows what that is. The moisturizing element is sweet almond oil. And then there's also a nice, there's a peppermint essential oil in it. It gives it kind of a nice zing. And then the only preservatives are vitamin E and rosemary essential oil extract. It's a natural preservative. So it's just five ingredients. And to me, what's nice about it is it goes on smoothly. And it also has multiple uses. People put it on their cuticles and different, just drawers even, to de-squeak a drawer. But we have the beeswax lip balm and then also a beeswax salve that comes in a tin. And it's similar ingredients.
I used to use, when I was a kid, I would string tennis rackets.
With beeswax.
And you would use beeswax to lubricate, I guess you'd say. Mm-hmm. Make it go smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
And you could always buy beeswax at the hardware store. I don't know. Can you still buy beeswax at the hardware store?
I don't know. You can buy it at our store.
Okay. Now, do you all have all these folks that you do retail with?
Mm-hmm.
Do you sales online as well?
We do. Yeah, okay. We have an online website.
Okay.
We have sort of three channels. We sell a lot of, mostly wholesale is our bread and butter, okay. Like to these local boutiques and things and
right.
local grocery stores. We sell online, and then at our farm, we have a farm shop in Eagleville.
Okay. And so give us the address of that, or where can people go for that?
Yeah, well, it's 4818 Highway 41A,
okay.
Eagleville, zip is 37060.
Is that open year-round, or is...
It's kind of seasonal.
Okay.
Like, we're open maybe 3 days a week right now, okay. But if we're there, we're open.
Okay.
Just stop. I mean, you really can't miss it. If you're familiar with the Eagleville area, I don't know if everyone is, it's kind of a growing area. We're 3 miles south of the little downtown area.
Of downtown Eagleville.
Downtown Eagleville, right. Yes.
The stoplight in Eagleville. We're 3 miles south of that.
Yes. Well, and we're going to start...
Now, is that Rutherford County?
We're actually in Bedford County.
Bedford County.
Over the Rutherford line.
All right, so that's the same county that Shelbyville...
Yes, Shelbyville's the county seat.
Right.
And this spring, we're going to start doing tours at the Honey House. And, you know, like for school groups, scouts, church groups, things like that. Homeschool families. And we're going to do some beekeeping classes this spring and summer.
Well, that's fantastic. The information about that, if people listening want to know about it.
It will be on the website, and we'll probably put it on social media, too. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
You have a Facebook page.
Facebook is called The Honey House.
The Honey House. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not Truby, but...
Well, it's actually The Honey House, home of Truby Honey.
Okay. All right. So look for that on Facebook, and you'll be kept informed about the activities that you all have planned.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's so great. All right. So what else did we need to talk about as far as bees and beekeeping is concerned? Oh, the other products that you have.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I got before we got together was your spun honey.
Yes.
Now tell us what's going on there.
Well, that's our whipped honey. Some people call it creamed honey or spun honey.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's honey that's started to crystallize, and we whip it to a spreadable texture.
Okay.
And we call that one Tennessee snow, because the joke is it never snows in Nashville, so we had to make our own. And it's been really popular. It's great on peanut butter sandwiches because it doesn't drip, or cheese plates and things like that. We have a cinnamon version as well that has been really popular. It's just the plain honey with organic cinnamon whipped into it.
Fantastic. Well, guys, it's been terrific to have you. Lots
Thanks
of fun to
us.
Learn
Thank you
to
very
learn
much.
About what you're doing, and I wish you the best of luck. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you.